This week on Lunchbox Envy, it's the only edible type of orchid.
90% of the world's supply is artificial.
And it tastes stronger to humans than it does to dogs.
It's vanilla. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Manu. How are you doing, Manu?
Good, thank you, Jack. How are you doing?
Excellent.
We are also joined this week by baker and food writer Ed Kimber.
Hello.
Pleasure to have you. It's getting quite aromatic in here.
Mm.
Is that anything to do with the dry, brown-looking sticks in front of us? So, as we mentioned, this is the vanilla episode. Now, is this just going to be the most, like, straight-laced, boring episode ever?
Vanilla's excellent. I think it gets such a kind of tough time because it's ubiquitous that it has become a synonym for boring or everyday, but it's so complex and so delicious.
I know.
And I think it's deeply unfair.
It's very unfair.
Yeah.
So in front of us, we have four vanilla pods and they are, to people who aren't familiar, it's really kind of evil looking. It does look quite sad, doesn't it? It looks like a very old, withered, dead, like a string bean,
it's
I suppose.
Quite like Tim Burton.
Yes. Tim Burton.
Yeah. It's not something that's been picked up from like the forest floor.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. This does not look delicious in any form. Smells great, but
it does.
Looks
it still
terrible.
Smells lovely.
And also probably doesn't taste great. I've never chewed one like just on its own.
I mean, that's £5 if you want to try it.
So yeah, they are expensive.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, the second most expensive spice
after saffron.
In the world after saffron. Yeah. By weight. Yeah.
And then I've heard sometimes, depending on the time of year and how production's been, more expensive than silver.
So
it sits in that quite spenny zone.
It
is remarkable the visual side of vanilla compared to its aromatic side.
It's the thing I'd like to think about a lot is how did someone go, oh, this is going to be delicious, let's put this in food.
It's mad because vanilla is in like basically every baking recipe I've seen.
I
do it as well. I will just automatically put vanilla in, like, especially brownies and stuff, because I feel like it's weird not to.
Well, it's that thing of, I think often we just assume vanilla should go in lots of things, and actually I think it gets used maybe too much.
Ooh.
Like, I see people putting vanilla in, like, a brownie.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's one of those things where it's not going to show up in something so dominated by other flavours, especially something like chocolate that's going to hide it.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think we use it too much, but I do think it can be a real star and like make things taste incredible.
Nice. What's the best recipe, you think? Like, when does vanilla sing?
To me, vanilla is really, really good in dairy because dairy has, it's not neutral, obviously, it has flavor, but it's a really good carrier of vanilla. Also, weirdly, alcohol is an amazing carrier of vanilla. Vanillin, the thing that makes vanilla taste of vanilla, is soluble in alcohol, so which is why extract is alcohol-based.
Yeah.
But also our brains actually think of vanilla things having a boozy element, which is why there was a test done by Serious Eats, so US website, where they got all their staff members to taste test different things made with fake vanilla, real vanilla, expensive vanilla, cheap vanilla. And it came out that it made no difference what quality they used because a lot of times the alcohol level of the extract was what they thought of as being vanilla, because the booziness of it helped carry the idea that there was vanilla in it. So they said you could add a couple of dashes of vodka to a recipe using fake vanilla and it would help make it seem
more vanilla-y.
Oh, wow.
I do remember being a young child and smelling dad's vanilla essence that he kept in the fridge and being like, that's so great. And I think I snuck into the fridge and I put a little bit on my finger
and it burned.
And I tasted it. And I was like, oh, I regret my decision.
Yeah.
Let's open our first lunchbox. And this week, it's mine. So, are you ready for a savoury vanilla dish?
Ooh.
I am. I'm very intrigued.
Oh, let me plate up. So this week I've made a Madagascan vanilla-infused curry.
Oh.
And it's chicken curry, and it's got all the, you know, expected curry powder and turmeric. But it's also got cloves, which I think
interesting.
Is quite an interesting, and in our country, very associated with desserts. Mm-hmm. And then also one vanilla pod.
Ooh.
Which again, I want to sort of dispel the myth that vanilla is sweet.
Because mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. a lot of people smell vanilla and associate it so much with dessert
yeah.
that they smell sweetness. Yeah, but there's yeah, no yeah. sugar in a vanilla pod. Whereas countries like Cambodia Ooh. And Madagascar, where they put vanilla in curries or, you know, savory things, mm-hmm. they would smell a vanilla pod and smell savory things.
Mm. Definitely.
Can you taste the vanilla?
Yeah, definitely.
So you can see it as well.
It's really aromatic.
Like rounded.
But you definitely taste... Yeah, definitely.
Mm. It's an interesting assault on our senses, I think, as yeah. Westerners, because it's a kind of new flavor combination.
Which definitely.
I don't know why it's not more popular. But
I think it works really well. Really that good. Is delicious.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
Really good.
Mm. I was going to say, it kind of reminds me of my like Mauritian curry. I think it's the cloves in it.
Ah, yes.
It's like a bit sweeter.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
And Mauritius, not that far as the crow flies from Madagascar, which
all.
Is currently famous for its vanilla pods, yeah. because I think about 80% of the world's yeah. supply mm-hmm. comes from Madagascar. And it's got a long, fascinating history. Vanilla, in fact, comes from Mexico originally. So it was one of the old Colombian exchange. It came east.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. we think it was first used by the indigenous Mesoamericans about 1,500 years ago. And they would mix it into their hot chocolate.
Because so the hot chocolate was spiced originally, so it would have a whole bunch of
And it didn't
spices.
Have sugar either.
No.
So it was vanilla and chocolate, which is very bitter. And then Hernan Cortes discovered that this delicious spice, and he brought some back. And for about 200 years, it was only ever imported from Mexico because it only was pollinated by a very specific small type of bee that lived in Mexico. And it basically crawls into, they've got a very long flower and the bee basically crawls in and unbeknownst to us, it's kind of opening a shutter between the male and the female parts of the plant. And so we spent, you know, several hundred years imagining that you could only ever import vanilla from Mexico. And then people tried to grow it in different parts of the tropical world. And in fact, Reunion, which is a French island in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah.
That was the location for an innovation which absolutely exploded the vanilla market. So this was in 1841. As a young enslaved boy, he's about 12 years old, and he's called Edmund Albius. And he's like being kind of taught by a Western botanist who said that the vanilla plant couldn't be hand pollinated. So Edmund, being a young, precocious kid, he doesn't get, you know, kids don't like being told no. He went and gave it a go on the vanilla plant and he found a way to hand pollinate. He was the first person to successfully hand pollinate a vanilla orchid. He used a long kind of thin stick of grass, but he would poke the grass into the long flower and he would basically squidge the male and female bits together in what's called a marriage. It's quite intricate. You have to move a little flap called a rostellum in order to get these male and female plants to touch each other, basically. It's a bit like picking a lock, but he showed how it could be done, and then the method was passed around the rest of the island.
It's kind of amazing to think that that's actually still how they basically do it.
It's still how they do it.
It's a really interesting misconception. When you read about vanilla, it will say vanilla has to be hand-pollinated, and it's not quite true. Mm. So you can still get naturally pollinated vanilla. It's very, very rare, and it's very, very expensive. So I have two examples of vanilla. So these ones are Ugandan vanilla, which is not one of the main growers, but they make really good, excellent vanilla. And it's kind of your classic thin, long vanilla. It's nice and waxy and shiny. But the ones that come from Mexico, which are, it's a type of vanilla called Pompona, which is the original genus of vanilla.
Which is where the bee comes from.
Which is where the bee comes from, yeah. And they're very different because they take a lot longer to grow because they're done completely by
Oh my God.
They're much shorter.
Wow.
They're very, very fat.
Yeah.
These big chunky boys of vanilla. But the flavor's really different. And they're incredibly expensive, but they are absolutely delicious.
Looks a little bit like a cigar.
Yeah, it's way more cigar-like.
It's much more leathery, isn't it?
It's more leathery, yeah.
It does not smell as nice as
that. No, I like that.
I think it's a really delicious flavor.
It's more like
a It is different, yeah. Well, actually, Pompona vanilla is often used more in fragrance production.
Wow.
But these are much, much rarer, which is why they're so expensive.
Yeah. I'm really pleased that you can still buy both because...
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As I said, 80% of vanilla production comes from Madagascar now.
Mm-hmm. So there is actually three main types of vanilla.
Yes, sorry, I should be specific. Vanilla
but
planet
Madagascan is the by far the biggest. Yeah. And it's also what you think of when you think of vanilla. Mm-hmm. If you ask someone to like close their eyes and picture or try and imagine the smell or aroma of vanilla.
And you often see the flower on
the 100%. Yeah, exactly. Like that is definitely the flavor profile they're going for. And then you have Tahitian vanilla, and that's way more subtle. Okay. It's more kind of aromatic and floral.
Sure.
And then you have Mexican, which is a bit more kind of intense and robust. But yeah, Madagascan is definitely what you think of. Mm-hmm. Sometimes called bourbon vanilla. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's not because of alcohol. It's because of the island.
I was going to say.
And then bourbon vanilla now is used for a few parts of the world, not just the island itself. But then outside of that region, it's just Madagascan vanilla. But it's the same genus. It's just bourbon specifies a more specific region. Yeah. But yeah,
Bourbon being the former name of the Reunion Island.
Well, yeah.
Edmund Albarn was
right. I didn't know that.
Yes. I didn't put that together.
So cool.
But does this Mexican stuff go through the same processing?
I assume it would have, because the process for making the vanilla that we're looking at was like created by the Mesoamericans. Like they were creating this to put in their chocolate and stuff. Way back when. So yeah, the process is insane.
If you can imagine this sort of vine that's hanging off a tree, and then there'll be a bunch of flowers, maybe five, and they open for a day each, one by one.
Oh yeah.
So imagine my hand, that maybe the thumb goes for the first day, and then the index finger, and then the middle finger. Then on each day, you have to catch it, and you have to pollinate each one. So it's only when each flower is pollinated that it will grow a pod.
But they are like the pandas of the plant world, you know? So and impressive. It's like, a plant should not exist. We should not have this. Like, it's mad.
But did you read that it takes 9 months for them to grow the whole length of the pod? They're, what, 15 centimetres long?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
You chop them off, harvest them, and then you have to let them sweat. They get all cuddled up in a little blanket. And then, no, genuinely, so, and then they have to keep them hot and moist, because if they get cold and moist, or at least warm and moist, mold will start to grow. And mold is the killer of a vanilla crop, right? Everyone's trying to avoid mold. So what they do is they'll wrap them in these blankets and then leave them in the sun and then take them inside overnight so they don't cool down. And they do this for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
And then you start to dry them. So then you leave them out in the sun uncovered.
Yeah.
But they can't get too dry, so you have to move them into the shade so often. And you get these kind of sommeliers of the vanilla crop who will just like look at it and know exactly like, oh, it needs another 3 days in the sun, or maybe like take it back to the shade. You also have to massage them. I don't know if this is essential, but like to make...
Is this like the Wagyu thing where it's not quite true?
I don't know. No, I mean, I read some reputable sources that say you do. And then you finally dry them to the like right moisture content, and then package them up and sell them around the world. So it can take up to a year to get a vanilla pod from pollination to shipping.
I mean, it kind of makes sense why they're
so expensive. That's why it's expensive.
Also reminds me a little bit of the chocolate making process, where the beans are fermented. Obviously, these aren't fermented, but they're made to go hot, so they can develop flavor, and then dried out in the sun.
Yeah. The chemical processes, because they don't smell of vanillin when they're plucked, when they're ripe.
Yeah, sure.
They're just horrible and bitter, and maybe a little bit floral. But
interesting,
the vanilla flavor we're getting from that is all comes from the processing.
It's mad because it's only 2% vanillin.
Really? So
that's in a good vanilla pod as well. Yeah.
Oh, so that
vanillin, we should be enunciating. It's the chemical compound that we recognize as the smell of vanilla.
But it's also the beans I showed you, the ones from Mexico, they have a much lower vanillin content because vanilla has tons and tons of flavor compounds, but vanillin is the one that is identifiable as the kind of central flavor of vanilla. Mm-hmm. And so often the Mexican pods were viewed as lower quality because they had lower levels of vanillin, when really what it means is they just have a different flavor profile. Have you ever seen a furry vanilla pod?
No.
Oh, gosh.
So very often you will find a vanilla pod, you know, the idea is a good pod is meant to be black, but it's meant to be slightly shiny, have a bit of sheen, have a waxy coating. Okay. It should be bendy because it's a sign of a good level of moisture. Mm-hmm. It should never be dry or brittle. That's a sign of an old, not very good pod. But sometimes they come with this like white fur on the outside. It looks like fur. And there used to be a myth that if it had that, it meant they had a huge amount of vanilla in and it was a really good vanilla pod.
Like a shiny Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very hard to find. But actually, they found out recently that it's kind of true. It is vanillin that's coming through, but it's just to do with how they've been stored. So I was really interested because I kept ordering these vanilla pods from Uganda and they were coming really white. I was like, oh, these pods must be excellent. So I started looking into it. And it turns out it's because they're not vacuum packed. If you vacuum pack them, which is how most vanilla is transported from wherever they're grown, they don't oxidize in the same way. But if they're packaged loose, they oxidize. And that's the vanillin kind of leaching out. So it's not to do with a high level of vanillin, just because of how they've been stored. But also don't throw them away. Many people think it's a defect. So they throw their pods away. Nothing at all. It's just, you know, it's just vanilla kind of escaping out of the pod
itself. Oh, top tip.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, when chocolate melts and then hardens again. Exactly. And all the fat like bloom.
Yeah. It is just a form of crystallization.
That's
definitely.
That's so cool. Yeah.
So because vanilla is so expensive, it's actually a target for vanilla rustlers.
Whoa.
People will come in because you've got a 9-month window when it's commercially viable, but not quite ready. And so there's a real problem with violence and people stealing and having to guard their own crops because they're also quite vulnerable. They can't run away.
Yeah.
And they don't have much deterrence. They don't grow their own spikes. People will come in the night and chop down your vanilla pods. So some novel solutions. People have done tattoos, a little stick and poke method.
Whoa.
And
like on the pod.
Yeah, not on the pod.
They're like, this is my vanilla. This is the gang.
My vanilla. Yeah.
Which gang do you like?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I'm the vanilla gang. They're really boring. and even microchipping so that they can be traced by the authorities if they're ever recovered.
The vanilla police.
The vanilla police, yeah.
Again. Special branch.
CSI Antananarivo. Oh,
love it.
Time for our second lunchbox, and this week that comes from Ed.
And unsurprisingly, I've baked you something.
Oh, amazing.
So I have made you a Kipferl, which is an Austrian cookie.
Yeah.
It's normally made with some form of ground nuts, normally made with almonds, although I actually love it with pecans, because pecans and vanilla is an amazing combination.
Goodness.
What you do is you make a kind of very simple cookie dough, like a kind of shortbread dough. Mm-hmm. They're shaped like crescents because they get their name from Kipferl, which is the original form of croissant. So they have the same kind of crescent shape. And then once they're baked and still warm, you coat them in vanilla-infused sugar. So I've also brought you some of my homemade vanilla sugar. So this stuff has all my old vanilla pods in there.
Can
and
I
it's incredibly
smell?
Fragrant.
It's quite a lot, actually.
I do use
it
a lot.
Oh, this is the, is it the Mexican?
So this is a mixture. This has some Mexican, Ugandan, and Madagascan vanilla in there. I just add vanilla to it as I'm going along. But that is kind of
what
I wanted to talk about. Because, as we've said, vanilla is very, very, very expensive, especially if you buy it at the supermarket, which would be my number one point, is don't buy vanilla from the supermarket.
Interesting.
Extracts and bean paste and all those things, fine. But if you're buying actual vanilla pods, it's a slightly false economy to buy from the supermarket.
Interesting.
Because often the quality is really low because they're old, stale, and overpriced. Whereas if you go to a vanilla producer or a vanilla company, it's often significantly cheaper and you get much better quality. So I will often buy direct from them. And there's loads of them. You can buy them just online from multiple places, but supermarkets specifically tend to have low quality. But my whole point
name is... Name and shame.
Begins with S, no. My whole point is that vanilla's expensive, but there's so much more flavor you can get out of them.
Of course.
And I think basically what happens is... We all know that the easiest way to get vanilla out of them is scrape the seeds out of the middle, put that in something, and we're done. And a lot of times that pod then gets thrown away. But there's so many different ways you can keep using that pod for a long time or in different ways to get lots of more value from the pod. So I'm going to give you a cookie and I'm going to tell you the easiest ways to do it.
Oh, we have such a nice job.
Thank you.
To be fair, I have boosted the amount of vanilla in these. They're quite heavy on the vanilla. But they'll be should be really nice and tender and crumbly.
They smell beautiful.
Yeah,
and
very,
love,
very aromatic.
I think one of my favorite things about when you're using the actual bean is seeing all of the little
seeds.
Yeah,
it's really nice. And
it's
I think
satisfying.
Our brains tell us it will taste stronger if you can see it. And so I think that's why bean paste became really popular, is that they're very, very like visual. And so it tells you the story that it's going to taste really strongly of vanilla. But so when you use vanilla, as I said, the most common way of using it is you cut it down the middle, scrape out the seeds, done. If you're going to do an infusion, so there's kind of two types of infusion. There's hot or there's cold. So hot infusion is hot, obviously, where you bring a mixture of cream or whatever liquid it is to a simmer, and the beans are in there. And it's a very fast way of infusing flavour into something.
Like making a panna cotta.
Yeah, exactly. But that's really good for really strong, robust flavours. But if you have something that's really more floral or delicate, hot infusions can knock out some of those more volatile flavours. Okay, yeah. So if you want to get the full picture of the vanilla, you could do a cold infusion where there's no heating involved. You mix in the vanilla, you put it in the fridge, and you leave it for, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours, and it slowly absorbs flavors. And the idea is it's meant to give you the more kind of the fuller picture of whatever you're infusing, especially if it has more delicate flavors. But once you've used that vanilla, you can wash it, rinse under the sink, get rid of any dairy that was on there. But then that vanilla pod has more usage. So the easiest way is just to mix it in a jar of sugar. And then shake the jar every now and again, and eventually the sugar will kind of absorb some of that moisture. You can supercharge that vanilla. So if you dry the pod, either in a dehumidifier or just leave it on the counter for a while, it'll eventually dry, or in a very low oven. Once it's dry and brittle, you can blend it in a spice grinder, make a vanilla powder. But you, often if you go into like a French patisserie, you'll see like desserts dusted with what looks like vanilla. But it's the outside pod and beans like blended together to make a really flavorful powder. And that's great, like dusted onto things for decoration and flavor, or mixed into ingredients, because some people can't have alcohol, and most vanilla extract is alcohol based. So a bean powder or a bean paste is a really great way of doing it without alcohol.
Great workaround.
Definitely. And you can make your own vanilla bean paste. So vanilla bean paste is a kind of sugar syrup that's infused with vanilla, kind of simply, without alcohol. But it often carries more vanilla per kind of gram than an extract does. So kind of people often use it when they want to see vanilla, because the bean paste is like lots of pieces to it. Or you can kind of make your own vanilla extract.
It's amazing.
It's not quite the same, but it's a good way to keep using that vanilla so you don't waste it. You just basically soak the beans in alcohol. It can either be vodka if you want something neutral, or people often use bourbon. And I think it's because of the name.
But it does work
really well, and it works especially, well, my favorite is rum, because rum and vanilla together is just delicious. But in the same way that you can do that to kind of make an approximation of a really good extract, you can just flavor alcohol that way. So if you want to make your own like vanilla vodka because you love a vanilla cocktail,
Cornstarch martini.
You just add some vanilla to some vodka and leave it for a while, and it will eventually take on that flavor.
So cool.
I've never considered that.
But there's so many usage, and because it is so expensive, I just think it's worth getting every ounce of flavor from it as possible.
PSA, you're done.
It's like zero waste. I love it.
Yeah, totally. And like, especially when you blend up the pod, you're literally using every part of it. In something I'm working on, I take the pod and I blend it with cocoa nibs to make a cocoa nib and vanilla powder. And that's great. My favorite way to use it is if you're making, say, like a really classic like ring donut, instead of just using plain sugar as the coating, use this cocoa nib vanilla sugar. And it's quite subtle, but it has this really nice aromatic flavor that's kind of like a little bit of vanilla, a little bit of cocoa, and it's just delicious.
It sounds amazing.
But yeah, you might as well use every bit of it if you're spending all that money.
But you get it into a line on the table and snort.
I'm not sure the height it would give you.
You get an olfactory boost, wouldn't you? You'd be like, whoa, the whole world smells of vanilla.
Actually, that reminds me of, I'm talking about vanilla and drug. So in the 18th century, like, it was actually considered quite a kind of sexy aphrodisiac. Spice.
Classic.
Every food is an aphrodisiac.
Yes.
But there was a German doctor who prescribed it like Viagra. And he claimed that he had cured at least 343 men of impotence and turned them into astonishing lovers.
Astonishing is a great choice of words.
At least 343.
At least.
So specific. But also, it's really funny that it was used as Viagra, and yet we call it vanilla, in boring. That's so.
But
like,
also, that vanilla etymologically comes from the Spanish word, or the Latin via Spanish, for little sheath or vagina. It's the same root, which I also think is ironic because they're orchids, which is the Latin word for a testicle.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a vagina growing on a testicle. Yeah. They were filthy back in the day.
So sexy.
Okay, time for our final lunchbox. And this week, that is Manu's.
So I have brought today a book. Basic Recipes, The Foundations of Modern Cookery by Margaret Shepherd Fiedler or Fiddler. I am not sure which one.
I'm definitely using Fiddler.
I'm also going to use Fiddler.
It's just way better, yeah.
Madge Fiddler.
Oh, God. So the contents of the book is actually not what I'm going to talk about today. It's irrelevant. It's the smell I want to talk about. The reason I picked this book is because it is a very old.
Okay.
Look at the pages. Beautiful. Yeah,
very
fusty.
Yellowed, actually.
Now, give it a smell. Ed, would you like to smell the book?
Is there a connection from old paper to vanilla?
Oh, yes, there is.
Oh, no really? Way.
So when the lignin in paper, so lignin is the part of wood that kind of gives it its structure.
Okay, yeah.
So it's normally removed in paper making, but some stays right. in. Okay. And when it breaks down as paper ages, the lignin releases vanillin.
No way.
Which is wow. why kind of old books have that sweet vanilla-y smell.
Oh, wow. Now you mention it. Oh, that is...
It's so
interesting.
Because mm-hmm. people, there's often like a sort of bibliophilic enjoyment of old libraries and stuff. Mm-hmm. And do you think it's because it all smells like panna cotta?
Yeah, you know, I prefer the smell of new books to old books.
Okay, they've also got a distinct wow. smell, don't they? It's mm-hmm. often slightly sweet.
Yeah, there is something beautiful about the smell of books. But yeah, so some of that smell is vanillin.
Wow.
I wanted to talk a bit today about vanillin from different sources, so not straight up vanilla. Because as we said, like 90% of the vanilla that we use and cook with or use in scents and perfumes and stuff isn't from the actual plant.
Yeah,
it's synthetic.
Wow, 90%.
It's mad. So yeah. the demand for vanilla has always been incredibly high, and we've never been able to match supply to demand.
Yeah.
So even at the very start, when we just learned how to pollinate it, people have been synthesizing vanillin. Mm-hmm. So since the 1800s. People make it out of wood pulp typically because it has all of this kind of natural vanillin in it anyway.
Okay.
So this can be like pine or spice. Sometimes they make it from rice bran. And then there's another way, which is to make it from petrochemicals, a chemical called guaiacol. One of the more famous ones when we think about vanilla.
Oh, I think I know what you're going to say.
I literally just saw something in your notes and I was like... Didn't know that was coming up today.
Okay, yeah. Well, do you guys want to guess what it is?
Well, I've just seen what it is.
Is it castoreum?
It is castoreum. There's quite a few things to debunk because it is such a famous like fake vanilla scent, but it was never really used as a vanilla substitute because it was still like pretty expensive and quite hard to come by. It was used as a kind of scent enhancer that did a similar job to vanilla, but wasn't to replace vanilla.
Okay. And what is it?
So... It is a scent that comes from a beaver's castor gland or castor gland, which a lot of people think is like basically in its anus. So they think it's
what
an.
Why do they think that, Manny?
They think it's an anal secretion, which it is not. It's the castor gland is just distressingly close to its anus.
I can see why they make that leap.
And the secretion is also brown and gooey. So it is pretty poopy as well.
Go and squeeze that beaver and see if it smells of vanilla. Do they go through all the North American animals, you think?
Just like, what is this?
Moose, let's
elk.
Squeeze
it. Yeah. You know, it's quite violent. But, you know.
What about a wolf?
Yeah. Oh, God. It's a substance that they use to scent mark, and it's incredibly smelly.
Okay.
But it does have this kind of like musky, quite floral smell. And it was so popular back in the day. In the 19th century, European beavers were nearly wiped out because they were being hunted so heavily for their pelts and for their castor glands. But it's rarely used anymore for food flavoring or perfumes.
Well, there aren't any beavers left.
Actually, they're doing pretty well now. But in the 1980s, especially in the US, there's a really big push for foods to be able to say they were kosher. And castoreum, like beaver anus juice.
It's not vegan.
Yeah, it's not super kosher. People stopped using it. So when it was used in really, really tiny amounts. So it was usually less than 10 parts per million. So
was it used mainly in non-food production? Was it used in kind of the more perfume side of things? Or was it actually used for food, kind of in that extract replacement?
Yeah, I think it was used in food, like I said, not as like a vanilla replacement.
Yeah,
it's
like an additional.
FDA approved as being.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's like
and
a
the
natural...
fact that they bothered to measure it was means being used in food. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. And to this day, even like, you know, you can go on the FDA website and look up castoreum.
There's alcohol in Scandinavia that still uses castoreum.
Oh, really? Beverhuit. Yeah, it means beaver shout.
Oh.
Wow. Is it a vanilla kind of flavoured alcohol?
It's vodka infused. Oh, wow.
My method sounded easier. Yeah, just put some vanilla pods in a jar of vodka.
With some castoreum.
But also looking at, I really did try and get castoreum for the pod today.
Wow.
And obviously it's really expensive and you can't. But looking at the shape of the gland when they're dried is like super, super gross. But just whilst we're on kind of unusual animal-y smells that are used in perfume, it's another two of my favourites. Skatol, which is named after...
I'm slightly worried about
that. Doesn't sound good.
Oh, no. So it is exactly what you think. It's after the ancient Greek word for excrement, skato. So it's a chemical that's found in poo, but also some flowers. And if you use it in like really small doses, it actually smells amazing. So it's in quite a lot of perfumes and stuff. And then there's civetone, which is another kind of animal secretion. So again, in big doses, absolutely not. In tiny doses, beautiful, musky.
Is that why civet coffee is meant to be tasty?
That's probably why.
Because it's meant to take on some of that flavour.
Yeah, the civety aroma, yeah.
Civet coffee, for those who don't know, is coffee that has been eaten and then passed through a civet and then roasted.
Kopi luwak.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And a civet is a small, like...
Is it like a monkey?
No, it's more like a ferret. Fox, I would say.
Okay.
Between a fox and a ferret. Yeah. And it lives in trees and it's kind of long and slender. And it's a mammal. Yeah.
Although I don't know anyone who's tried kopi that says it's good.
No.
Everyone I know in coffee says it's disgusting.
It does feel a bit like...
But also apparently there's tons of fake kopi because there's such a market for it. That people just pretend their rubbish coffee is kopi.
I'm just thinking, how do they fake it? Do they eat the coffee?
Add a little scatol.
God.
Okay, that's it for this vanilla pod. Every time we said pod, I was thinking podcast. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at LunchboxEnvyPod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Ed, do you have any parting recipes for us?
One of my favourite recipes is a really simple vanilla ice cream. I think homemade ice cream is great. Anyway, if you make it with really good vanilla and you make it at home, it will taste so much more special than almost anything you can buy in the supermarket. Amazing. So it's worth trying.
Nice.
And we'll finish with this from Anthony Capella in his book, The Food of Love. Vanilla is like a beautiful woman. You don't notice it straight away, but once it's there, it's unforgettable.
Sorry, it.
It.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Onryo and me, Jack Chambers, with special guest Ed Kimber. It was mixed by Liang Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.